Second hour, Darren Donick and Chase here on this Wednesday. Beautiful Wednesday outside. I'm unmuted. This is good. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McCabe with you. Three more hours to go. The first hour flew by. Hopefully this one will too. Adam Vinken from The Athletic. Let's talk a little hockey, a little pucks and sticks and nets. By the way, Shea Weber, one game away from the Stanley Cup final. How cool is that? What a win last night for Montreal. This is going to be another one of those stories if they pull this off. I mean, this is, dare I say, this is like the St. Louis Blues. I mean, this is going to be that example we throw out there every year, right? Just get in and anything can happen. Adam, what's up?
Hey, friends. How are you?
Great. How was vacay?
It was good.
Yeah.
Spent a week visiting the in-laws in Charleston, South Carolina. There are far worse places to have family than Charleston, so that was nice. My wife's cousin got married on Saturday, so went to their ceremony, had a good time, and now I'm back.
Yeah. You got a tan?
Kind of. I don't tan very easily.
There's some people on the show that can relate, so we got you. Here is the first question. We got into a long discussion yesterday about the Predators offseason, and I'm going to start it with you where I started it yesterday with Willie and Chase, or at least I asked him this at some point in the discussion. You can only name one thing, and I get it. There's a list of things to do that the general manager has to do this offseason. This is a vitally important offseason. But if you had to put, if you have to rank your things to do, what is number one on the list that David Poile has to address first this offseason? What's number one on that list?
So when you say first, are you saying like it's the first thing he has to do chronologically or
Correct.
The most important thing he has to do?
Let's do both. I like the where you went with that. Let's do both.
Okay, so to me,
because they could have different answers, right?
It could have different answers. I do think they're sort of connected, though, because the next big event on the offseason calendar is the expansion draft, which is July 21st, I believe, is when it's unveiled. But July 17th is when the teams have to submit their list to the NHL, their protected list. So the Predators have less than a month to figure that out. So to me, the most important thing that the Predators have to do this offseason is they have to move on from at least one member of their core group. Because I believe it was you, Darren, yesterday, because I listened to that conversation that you gentlemen were having. I believe it was you, Darren, who said there are two things that have not changed over the past few years, the general manager and the core players.
Correct.
And the general manager is not going anywhere.
Correct.
So last year we saw sort of the secondary players be moved out, trading Nick Bonino, letting Kyle Turris move on in free agency. Craig Smith, buying out Kyle Turris, trading Austin Watson. You saw a lot of the secondary players move on.
Right, they chipped around
like
the core.
Yes. I can kind of got those a little bit confused, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
The core group is the one thing that remains untouched. And whether it's through the expansion draft or a trade at some point in the offseason, I think this core group cannot return 100% intact. So whatever it takes, I think David Poile, first and foremost, needs to find a way to move on from a core member of this team. And I consider the core to be Victor Arvidsson, Matthew Shane, Ryan Johansson, Philip Forsberg, Matthias Ekholm, and Ryan Ellis. Am I missing somebody?
And you're basing this on basically contracts, really? That's how you identify the core? Big contracts, right? Who's getting paid the most money?
Yes.
Okay.
So I believe that one of those players needs to no longer be on this team when training camp starts
It's interesting how you define core, because I would consider Callie Yarncroke and Colton Sissons part of the core.
But that's why I've
said their contract
contracts,
is not
right.
Their contracts would not be the same category. Yeah.
But nobody ever, whenever there has been, let's say, first round exits, in fairness, Willie, no one ever brings up those players, right? Nobody ever calls in and says, this is Callie Yarncroke's
They're
fault.
Not getting blamed.
They're not getting blamed. One, they're having good seasons, right? So nobody is putting blame. We all know what this is about. This is guys right. that are paid to produce, and they're not producing to the level of their pay. That's really what it's about.
Yes. So you can define core play the core as you wish, and I think everybody's definition of the core would be a bit different. But to me, they need to move on from at least one of their higher paid players. How about that?
Do you think this is something that David Poile can pull a rabbit out of the hat? Or is this going to be too difficult? I mean, what do you assess the odds of that really happening? What would you put it at? Is it 50-50? Is it greater than, less than?
I would say less than 50%. Just because which of those players has value to another team. I know a lot of Predators fans have been plotting ways to get one of Matt Duchene or Ryan Johansson to Seattle for the past several months. But if you're David Poile, are you willing to pay a premium to secure one of their departures? I'm not so sure I would do that. I think there is a limit to how much I, as armchair GM, would give up to move on from one of those albatross-type contracts. You know, I think someone like Victor Arvidsson, for example, however, does have some trade value. His contract is not prohibitive, his cap hit, that is. Although he has struggled with injuries in recent years and hasn't produced to the same level, he's only, what, 2 or 3 years removed from a 34-goal season?
Yep.
I think you could take a chance on Victor Arvidsson as a bounce-back candidate. But I think a lot of Predators fans, especially because over the past couple of days, I've been collecting responses for a fan survey that I'm doing on The Athletic. And a lot of Predators fans are concerned about Victor Arvidsson. A lot of Predators fans are worried that Victor Arvidsson will never return to the player he once was. But I think it would be easier to get out from under his contract than Matt Duchene or Ryan Johansson.
I also brought up Rocco Grimaldi to Willie and Chase. Where is Rocco? Because it feels like he just doesn't fit what John Hines is doing. It just doesn't fit their system, their current system. At least that's what it feels like. I mean, he was a healthy scratch, and when he had opportunities this year, I mean, he had a hat trick. He had big four goals. I mean, he had big games, right? But it just seems like he is on the outside looking in. Do you agree with that? And if you do agree with it, how does David Poile go about handling Rocco Grimaldi this offseason, who I believe has got 1 year left at $2 million?
Yes, you're correct about the contract status. And yes, I agree. I do believe that Rocco Grimaldi has, for lack of a better phrase, fallen out of favor with John Hines. And I know a lot of Predators fans during the playoffs were wondering where Dante Fabbro was, but there were a lot of Predators fans that were wondering where Rocco was. And look, Rocco scored 10 goals this season, 5 of which came in consecutive games.
Yeah.
He had that 4-goal game against Detroit, and then he scored, I think, the following game against Chicago, I believe it was.
That's correct.
So he had 5 goals in 2 games.
Yeah.
And had 10 total. Here's the thing about Rocco Grimaldi. None of us can question the guy's work ethic. The guy works his tail off. He's incredibly exciting. He's fast. He has the ability to make some great plays. Think about that goal he scored in the season finale against Carolina, the last regular season game. I believe that was a shorthanded goal, if I'm not mistaken.
That is correct.
But, you know, that, you know, he, you know, that breakaway he scored, you know, he has that skill. He can score goals. But based on the analytics, I'm not sure if the eye test matches this as well, but based on the analytics, Rocco Grimaldi is a defensive liability. The Predators are worse when he is on the ice defensively than when he is not on the ice.
And Adam, just one detail on that, because you're absolutely right, but that was not the case under Peter Laviolette, right? Remember the line of Grimaldi, Bonino, and Smith, and how analytically almost perfect they were the year before? So it's an interesting contrast in 2 years because, and maybe it's the system, right? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, maybe, because you're right. The line of Rocco Grimaldi, Nick Bonino, and Craig Smith 2 years ago was one of the most productive lines in the NHL, not just in terms of actual goals scored for and against, but in terms of expected goals as well. Perhaps it is the system. Perhaps it was just Nick Bonino and Craig Smith were the perfect line mates for Rocco Grimaldi.
Perhaps.
But under John Hines, especially this season, Rocco was a defensive liability. And considering what John Hines was preaching in the defensive zone, Rocco was not providing that sort of defense for the Predators. So, at 1 year with $2 million left, it's always good to have a veteran player like that on your roster, someone who's familiar with the team, someone who can come in a pinch. But I wonder if David Poile could work a trade for Rocco. Maybe you get a mid to late round draft pick for someone like Rocco Grimaldi. I think at 1 year on an expiring contract with a $2 million cap hit, I think Rocco could be attractive to other teams. I'm not sure if the Predators will go down that route. But it appears that as long as Rocco is here and John is the coach, that he will not be a regular member of the rotation.
I want to ask you about defenseman Dante Fabbro. Pushing aside how great he is to deal with, good guy. We've been dealing with him since he was in college. Fantastic guy, right? Good teammate. Nothing bad to say there. But when talking to some people that have better hockey eyes than mine, people that have played the game, I take notice. I listen to what they say, their opinions. And it's the same people or types of opinions I've leaned on over the years when they told me, hey, you better watch out for this Roman Josi kid. He's phenomenal. Like, he's special. He's different. Just remember the name Josi. And it was like when no one was talking about it, it was like, huh? Okay. I'm being told basically they see him, his ceiling, as second D pairing, but really like a third D pairing guy.
Who's they?
I'm not telling you they. It's just
people
I've talked
to. Well, I'm just saying, but is it – you're talking about Nashville hockey ops people or observers who know the game?
Clearly, it's observers who know the game.
Okay,
and
well, no,
played the game,
I'm just saying that's an important distinction.
They
because
played
I think,
the game. Did
I
you
think
hear what
inside
I said?
The,
they played
inside the
game.
The walls might be a little more optimistic, and then others might be just, I think there's a line that's drawn. How they see him is different than how outsiders see him. Could be, right?
Well, yeah, I would say so, sure. I don't know what they. The organization doesn't tell me how they feel. So
okay,
I just want to say this
is somebody outside of their inner circle in their room.
Willie, I'm
right?
not getting into specifics. I've talked to people who've played the game that have better eyes than all four of us. Okay?
Right, you said,
and I'm telling
they
you, that's
see,
the
when
feedback
you, no,
I'm
you
getting.
Use the term, they see him. Now, when you're saying they see him, I don't know if you're saying that person who is telling you this is saying that the people inside
no,
the hockey ops.
Their opinion.
Because I think we know that they see him.
And if you're getting it from more than one person, they have the same opinions.
No,
I take notice of that.
I know what you're saying. I'm just saying I'm making that clarification because I think David Poile and those guys, John Hines, even on the night that they lost, you can tell their outlook for him is higher than that. Than what you're saying, right?
Once again, I will say what I just said. They are not telling me anything. The organization isn't telling me anything.
Okay. I'm just making
Go to
a
your
clarification.
Corners, gentlemen.
I mean,
go to your corners, gentlemen.
What is so hard about this? I mean, if you don't like what you're hearing, just say it. That's okay. You can disagree. I'm just telling you what I'm being told. And so, Adam, where I was going with that is, do you agree with that? And if you do, how do you think they handle Dante Fabbro moving forward? Although, as we just heard, clearly they feel differently than what I'm being told.
Calm down, everybody. This is
I'm not trying to stir it up. I'm just making a clarification because you said it well at the end there, Darren. I think we're on the same page now.
Chase, have you been privy to any of these conversations?
I have.
Do you trust that person, this particular person's opinion?
I do.
Okay, there we go.
I'm not questioning that at all. I'm just saying that person is not – because when you're in there in the hockey ops department, you're seeing things differently. Maybe it's a little more optimistic. Maybe that could be a flaw, right?
I would love for them to invite me into the hockey ops office and tell me whatever they want to tell me, but they don't do that.
That I don't get to do that either, so just so you know.
That would be fantastic.
Yeah.
They've got my number.
They've got all of our numbers, so still waiting on that text or phone call.
I'll be waiting patiently. Adam, the floor is yours.
Yes. Okay. Everybody got it all out of their system now?
We're all done.
Good? Okay. So
I need popcorn.
I think John said it best at the end of the season. I believe it was in his postseason comments, not directly after the Game 6 loss to Carolina. But he talked about how he feels that Dante Fabbro needs to work on his quickness and his strength so that they can put him in situations with top-caliber talent. I think John mentioned the likes of Jamie Benn and Nathan MacKinnon, Tyler Seguin, Gabriel Landeskog, players that are going to be back in the Predators division next year. I think, you know, Dante just turned 23. I think earlier this month he turned 23 years old. And, you know, Dante was thrown into the proverbial deep end. You know, he debuted at the end of a regular season, you know, in a playoff chase, in a division title race. At the end of the 18-19 season, played all six games in the playoffs against the Stars, and then was thrust into a top-four role next to Matthias Ekholm when the Predators traded P.K. Subban. So it was really a trial by fire for Dante. And defensemen take, you know, the routes that defensemen take to the NHL are very different. You know, look at the player that basically replaced Dante Fabbro this season, Alex Carrier. Alex Carrier basically spent four full seasons in the American League before getting an opportunity to play, you know, close to full time in the NHL. And look how competent and steady Alex was down the stretch and in the playoffs. You know, so in hindsight, would Dante have benefited from getting some time in the minor leagues? Yes. You know, were the Predators in a position to do that, wanting to sign him out of college? Who knows? But, you know, I don't think it is time to give up on Dante yet. I don't anticipate the Predators giving up on Dante either. But I see his ceiling as, you know, a second-pairing defender, you know, I wouldn't say shelter necessarily, but a guy that you don't give the toughest matchups to. And that's fine. But... You know, I think it is too soon to pull the plug on Dante Fabbro. He's too young to give up on.
Adam Vigan is with us from The Athletic. We're doing a deep dive into the Predators roster as they continue to get ready for the offseason maneuvering that will take place with Seattle and the expansion and so on. Adam, I know you've done some pretty detailed research on this. You know, when we had this discussion yesterday, I was bringing up the importance of knowing what you've got in UC Soros contract-wise in terms of, you know, how many years will be on the deal, what's he going to cost against the cap, because that will help sort out, you know, how much room that you have for the rest of your roster. You did some, I don't know if I would call it analytics, whatever it is, you did some, you consulted some people into how you try to put a value on him. I think he's pretty unique in terms of what he's done at his age and where he is on the timeline here. So give it your best shot. What's your projection on the options there?
Well, I think most goaltenders in Soros' position, and by that I mean his age, 26, and his level of experience. He has about 150 games of NHL experience in the regular season. You know, most goaltenders in that situation often sign shorter-term contracts. You know, I think a recent example that I continually bring up is Philip Grubauer, who's actually up for a new contract this summer. But when the Washington Capitals traded him after they won the Stanley Cup to the Colorado Avalanche, the Avalanche signed Grubauer to a 3-year, $10 million contract. At the time, Grubauer had less experience than Juuse Saros. I think he had about 100 games of NHL experience. And remember, he started those playoffs for the Capitals against the Blue Jackets right. before being replaced by Holtby, who ultimately helped them win the Stanley Cup. And then you look at some other ones. For example, Jordan Binnington. The summer that Binnington came out of nowhere to win the Stanley Cup for the St. Louis Blues, he signed a 2-year, $8.8 million contract. So that's a $4.4 million cap hit. You know, he has since signed a longer-term deal. But oftentimes, I feel like a shorter-term, prove-it type deal is usually what goaltenders at with UC status usually get. So to me, I think something in the, I mean, if I am putting a contract together for Juuse Saros, I am going to give him a 3-year, $12 million contract. It gives him a significant raise from what he earned previously, which is 1.5. So now he goes from 1.5 to 4. You know, it gives the Predators more time to continue to analyze him and determine whether he is truly the answer at number one goaltender. And I think it provides a little wiggle room in case things don't go well. And by the time that contract expires, hopefully Yaroslav Askarov, the Predators' top goalie prospect, is ready to come over to North America and perhaps challenge for the number one spot. So I think it would be wise not to lock into Juuse Saros for too long. That's why I think, personally, 3 years is the sweet spot, and I think a cap hit of between $3 and $4 million would be reasonable.
It's interesting what Askarov, at that point, it's so hard to see that far in the future, but we know this. He'll only be, 21 or 22 years old, which would be extremely young for a goaltender, not even considering whether he'd be your starting goaltender. I think that would be... that will be interesting to see just where he is at that point in his arc. Let me ask you this, Adam. When you get into, like you said, ways that you can get a little younger and rid yourself of one of the big contracts, I do think it's interesting when you look at Forsberg and Ekholm, they would probably have the most trade value. Would I be wrong in saying that in terms of what you could get in return for that? And at the same time, they're both vital to what the Predators have going right now. So when you're saying maybe trade Victor Arvidsson, that would rid you of the contract, but you wouldn't get a whole lot back. Like you said, maybe a lower level prospect or mid-level prospect or mid-level draft pick. You could get quite a bit more than that for Ekholm and Forsberg. I'm going against what David Poile has said publicly, right? He says he wants them both back, but it's going to be expensive to do both of those deals.
It is, and you're right. I would say that Matthias Ekholm and Philip Forsberg probably carry the most trade value of any player on the team. But you also have to factor in, you know, what to do with Mikael Granlund. You mentioned getting Juuse Saros' contract wrapped up and getting a sense of what he's going to cost. You also have to determine whether Granlund will be a salary cap casualty. If you want to re-sign Philip Forsberg or Matthias Ekholm this summer, or both, you need to know that you're going to have the room for them after next season when those contracts start, which might mean not holding on to Mikael Granlund, which would be hard to do because Mikael Granlund played a pivotal role in the Predators' turnaround this season. You know, David Poile and John Hines, you know, gushed about Granlund at the end of the season.
He was vital. He was vital to their success.
I mean, he was. You know, and I was among the people that thought it would have been better for the Predators to trade him and others at the trade deadline. But I mean, certainly Granlund proved his worth over the course of the season, especially in the second half. You know, but that's the question you have to ask yourself. You know, if you want to re-sign Philip Forsberg and or Matthias Ekholm, and if we take David at his word and he wants to re-sign both of them, it's going to be unlikely that you're going to have enough room to re-sign Granlund unless you part with significant, you know, cap space, whether that means trading Victor Arvidsson or, you know, getting rid of the $8 million contracts. You know, something's got to give. You know, that's the point that we're at right now. I mean, I know Predators fans are fed up with the directions of the team and they want massive changes. You know, I think the Predators are going to have to do it if they want to get, I mean, think about all of the restricted free agents they have to sign this summer. Now, they're not expensive, but UC Saros, Ellie Tolvanen, Dante Fabro, Jeremy Davies, Matthew Olivier, Tanner Jeannot, they have a lot of important young players they have to sign this year, and those contracts will add up, even though they won't be expensive contracts. So, you know, they might not be able to afford Granlund, you know, and that would be a big loss considering how important he was to them this season.
We're talking to Adam Vingan of The Athletic joining us here, breaking down the Preds offseason. Now, I did take your survey. I like the questions, and I know that others have looked at it too. You have one on here about David, or a couple on here about David Poile. Of the confidence level in him as the GM, of returning them to Stanley Cup contender status, and then also should the Predators have removed David Poile as GM at the end of the season. I don't think he should have been removed. I've been pretty steadfast in saying that he deserves the right to fix it, and this season was not a normal season, and the process started. They rebounded in the second half, and they made the playoffs for the seventh consecutive season. That should be recognized. However, I do wonder how much evaluation is taking place behind the scenes of both from the Predators' side of, okay, is he the one that can right this ship long-term beyond this season? And how is he evaluating himself of how much longer does he actually want to do this? At his age, as long as he's been here, all of those things should come into play. So what is kind of your view at this point of how important this offseason is for David Poile as the general manager of the Predators?
Well, I feel like for the last couple of years I've been saying this is a critical offseason for the Predators. This is a vital offseason for the Predators. You know, it's another important offseason. I mean, it's hard not to say otherwise. And you know, you mentioned the question I asked in my survey, which was on a scale of 1 to 5, with 5 being the highest, you know, how confident are you, the person taking the survey, that David Poile can return the team to Stanley Cup contender status? Now, I will, you know, I'm going to be posting the results tomorrow, I believe, but I will, you know, share some insight. So as I said, 1 through 5, a larger percentage of people voted 1 and 2 than 4 and 5. So there are the you know, and last time I checked, more than 900 people have participated in this survey. So, you know, to those who participated, more have an unfavorable opinion of David's job performance than have a favorable opinion. And another question I asked in the survey was whether the Predators would benefit from having a more visible owner who spoke directly to fans. They do not have that. That is their prerogative. David and Sean Henry are the public faces of the front office. The ownership group chooses not to comment on the record. As I said, that is their prerogative. I am not holding it against them. But I think at a time like this, it would be important, personally, to hear from a member of the ownership group, to hear what they think about how David is doing. Because they do not speak publicly, we do not have an idea of how they feel about David's, you know, job status, other than, you know, off the record, you know, background discussion that, you know, people like I can have. But I do think it would be beneficial to hear from them. It's not going to happen, but I do think that, you know, David continues to be motivated and the organization still has confidence in him that he can put this team back on the map. And, you know, you might not agree with that, but the organization certainly feels that way.
So we agree that, yes or no, this team needs a big time big boy forward.
Yes.
Yes. Do you believe that because they've gone after that. They've Duchesne is one, Johansson is one. Those are just a couple of examples
Turris
of that.
Turris was one.
Turris was one. Do you believe that they can effectively acquire that? Maybe this offseason, but they're going to need that, I believe, to truly compete for a Stanley Cup. Do you believe that this group, as currently or currently constructed, can go and acquire that type forward that they need?
No, I don't, because I don't think they have a lot of valuable assets. You know, if you know someone like Matthias Ekholm, for example, could probably fetch you one of those forwards. But let's talk Mitch Marner for a second. I don't think Mitch Marner is being traded by the Toronto Maple Leafs. But when the Maple Leafs were eliminated, there was a lot of finger pointing at Mitch Marner. Mitch Marner is what, 23 years old, 22, 23, 24, you know, has multiple 90-point seasons on his resume, 24. If I'm not mistaken. Yeah, 24. Multiple 90-point seasons or being on pace for 90-point seasons. He was a top-five scorer in the NHL this season, along with his line mate Austin Matthews. The Toronto Maple Leafs are never going to come out on top of a Mitch Marner trade. And if the Predators were serious, again, this is completely hypothetical, if the Predators were serious about acquiring someone like Mitch Marner, I don't think someone like Ryan Ellis or Matthias Ekholm gets it done. They're significantly older. They have larger contracts. I just don't think the Predators have the necessary assets to acquire a forward of that caliber. Like, I don't think their prospects are as highly touted as other teams like Los Angeles or Minnesota or New York, the Rangers. I don't think their roster players are that highly regarded to acquire a player like that. You know, to me, I feel like right now, the only way, and this might be extreme, the only way the Predators are going to be able to acquire a forward like that is if they tank. And I don't think they're going to do that. So, you know, I am incredibly skeptical that the Predators can acquire a forward like that, and I do not believe they have one on their team. And I do not believe any of the top forwards on this team, whether it's Philip Forsberg, Ryan Johansson, Matt Duchesne, Victor Arvidsson, are capable of reaching that level. So I kind of think they're sort of stuck when it comes to that.
I'm pretty much done, but I did want to say this before I turn it back over to Darren. The hardest question you had on this survey was which Predators rookie made the biggest impression this season. I struggled to answer that because you can make a case for, not really Davies, but you can make a case for Carrier, Janot, Olivier, Tolvanen, Trenin, they all had their moments.
Who did you choose?
I said Carrier just because he ended up playing.
You took someone over Tolvanen?
I did, I know.
Whoa.
I know, isn't that crazy? I said Carrier.
I'm telling him. Because I'm telling him what you did.
He ended up playing, you know, top D pair minutes, and I think he was the one, you know, outside of maybe Janot that you could go, yeah, he's been in the minors. That's what he is. Like you just thought coming in, he was a body filling a spot, and he made a huge impact. But I don't think there's, outside of Davies, there's really a wrong answer.
Can you give us a hint on who's leading that category? Is it close?
It is. It is close between Carrier and Tolvanen.
Okay.
It is a toss. It is virtually a toss up at this point.
And I'm not surprised. I think that's a hard choice. And I can see arguing for one or the other.
I think if Tolvanen had maintained his early season scoring pace,
he
would have won without any question.
Yep.
But I think the fact that Tolvanen slowed while Carrier emerged might have made it more complicated.
Yep, agreed.
You know, so, yeah.
And remember, Carrier, it was interesting, Carrier was really starting to blossom. Then he got hurt and came back. And did a great job after he came back. But, you know, there was that period of time. He missed a good portion of games that he otherwise would have played in, and he would have had a chance maybe to run away with it if he'd have played. Like, if he had played in between while the time he was injured, that he played on the front side and the back side, he might have won it going away. True?
And Tolvanen, to the opposite effect, when Tolvanen got hurt and he came back, he was not the same player.
Wasn't the same, yeah.
So
Never got into the groove again.
Yeah, so that, I, you know, I'll be curious to see who comes out on top. It is very close right now. My plan is to close the polls in 20 minutes.
Oh,
so if you're listening and you haven't participated, get your vote in now. It's only 12 questions. It takes about 2 or 3 minutes unless you're Chase, you know, struggling with a question. I don't know how long it took Chase to actually answer the entire survey. But I kept it simple on I kept it short on purpose. So it's
there are
fun.
No,
I mean,
essay
were there
questions.
Any other questions? There are no open choice questions. They're all multiple choice questions. Were there any other questions that were hard to answer?
Did you just take a shot at your readers? You said you kept it short, and you know, you basically were saying
also,
I dumbed it down. Yeah?
No, it wasn't about dumbing it down.
Okay.
It was about making sure that people don't get, you know, tired of answering all the questions. Like,
it's
man,
good.
30
yeah.
questions.
I think the core,
you
questions.
Know what, Adam? In fairness, that is a really good point, and I'm being serious. You know how you get the surveys from, I don't know, you go somewhere, you stay or whatever, and they send you, hey, could you complete this survey of your experience or whatever?
Yes.
And the next thing you know, like 15 minutes later, you're like, this is ridiculous. Like, I don't have time to answer this many questions. Like, this needs to be a much shorter deal. And so you're right, to your point. Some of these surveys are way too long, too many questions. And you, and by the way, you don't need comments on every question, right? That's another thing. You don't need comments on every question. Well, good job. All right, so you're closing it down in 20 minutes.
Yes.
Okay.
And last time I checked, I just had a hair above 900. I'd like to get to 1,000.
Let's
so
get
I
it
need
to
like
1,000.
80 people to participate in the next 20 minutes. So 4 people per minute. Let's
tell,
go.
Tell everybody where they need to go.
That's analytics.
I'm tweeting it too.
They can find it at theathletic.com. And, you know, of the, you know, and I would say, Darren, the other thing about those surveys that you're referencing when you go to a hotel or you go to a restaurant or you order something online, it's like, please fill out this survey and you can enter for a chance to win so-and-so. I would say, enter, fill out this 12-question survey and have a chance to win a $25 gift card. But I know that you would never give it to me, so there's no prize at the end of the survey.
Wow, you found a way to work it in.
Oh,
applause.
So proud.
Applause, applause, applause. Well done. By the way, I do have your Blue River Canyon Day Spa gift card in the mail. It's coming your way.
You do?
Mm-hmm. $100.
Day Spa, oh my
goodness.
Oh yeah,
$100.
$100?
Yep. Just for your weight.
Are you being serious?
Why don't you make it $200, Darren? Don't sell them short.
If we keep talking, maybe we can meet in the middle at 150. I'll have to look at what a couple's massage is, and then
it's 150. Would be happy to have a massage.
Okay. All right, Adam. Good stuff.
I could use a facial.
Really? You do facials?
No, but I could use one.
Hey, thanks for the visit as always. Hopefully we can get those numbers up.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, guys.
All right, we'll tweet it out at The Athletic. He's going to close those polls here very soon. We'll come back and talk a little bit more about this on the other side to close out hour number two. But right now I want to talk to you about DraftKings Sportsbook. It's not only my favorite sportsbook, but it's also America's top-rated sportsbook. I love using DraftKings Sportsbook. It's easy to navigate, which is important to me. Has plenty of instructions for new bettors and nearly limitless ways to get in on all the action. My friends and family have been loving DraftKings Sportsbook, and I know you will too. Listen to this great offer. Listen to what they've got for you. DraftKings Sportsbook is putting you courtside with a chance to turn $1. So you put up $1, and they'll give you $150 in site credits. All you have to do is pick any basketball team that's still in contention, put down that dollar, and if that team wins, you win $150 in site credits. Don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook also offers great odds and promotions on baseball, hockey, and so much more all week long. DraftKings is safe, secure, reliable. You can deposit and withdraw your funds at your convenience. Don't forget to download that top-rated app. Use the promo code 1025GAME. When you sign up, turn $1 into $150 in free credits. Bet on a basketball team that's still in contention, and if they win, you win, and you'll claim $150 in site credits. That promo code, again, to use, 1025GAME. Remember, this is for a limited time, and it's only at DraftKings Sportsbook. You must be 21 years of age or older, Tennessee only. Wager paid out and site credits restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789.